That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air.
Hey, welcome to Nature Bats Last and the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This August 4th, 2015 edition, episode 49 of Nature Bats Last comes live from Guy in the Mud Hut, from Pauline in Katona, New York, and from me, Mike, in Tucson, Arizona. Later in the show, we'll be taking calls. The toll-free number is 888-874-4888. It's our one-year anniversary show, and this party includes most of the regular voices from the show's initial year.
Our theme song is provided as a gift with our thanks by Afrizen, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com.
We have a small but significant live audience here at the Mud Hut. We're joined by Steve and Sarah. Sarah wrote the leading endorsement for the young adult book written by Pauline and I and just released within the last week. So thanks for joining us, Steve and Sarah.
You're welcome.
There you go. We'll kick off today's show with a few words from Afrizen. He sent this information by email upon our request. After his contribution, we'll be joined by the folks who have done bits of Breaking Hopium, Forrest Palmer, Corey Morningstar, and Alexis from Alexandria. As Mike said, we welcome your calls after we chat with them for a few minutes. You can call in toll-free at 888-874-4888.
Right, so start composing your questions and comments, and we'll just start off right now by reading Afrizen's commentary. So settle in for a few deeply personal paragraphs that will likely resonate with you as they do with us. And to honor Afrizen and his contributions to our show, we're going to each read a bit of him. And I'll start off. So this is Afrizen. This is from something that he sent us. If you're listening to the NBL podcast, then you and I probably share some basic understandings that human activity is wrecking the planet and that this environmental degradation is having an ever-increasing catastrophic effect on and for life on this planet. We who accept the situation as a real and immediate threat to living peaceful, meaningful lives are a minuscule minority. I personally feel powerless to affect any changes of attitude and behavior on the great majority of humans who are fully invested in a dominant, cancerous economic system that must seek growth. To you, my acceptance may seem defeatist, pessimistic, and weak. For me, my acceptance has given me a far deeper appreciation for my life. I have gratitude for each day above ground. I will try to explain. When I first came to an understanding of the human predicament, I was depressed and angry. I was filled with sorrow and rage that my life would not turn out as I had planned. I was angry with family and friends who couldn't or wouldn't see what was happening and how much worse our situation will get. I wrote the song, Nature Bats Last, which played in the beginning of this podcast as an expression of my rage and sadness. This anger and depression consumed me and made me miserable for many years. I was aimless and not a pleasant person to be around. Checking out was never an option. I love my family too much to put them through such an ordeal. I had to somehow find a way of living a worthwhile life and making the best of a dismal situation. I began to look for information that would allow me to reframe my perspective in a way that would allow me some peace of mind. Here are some of my understandings that have helped to change my perspective. Mike?
One, evolutionary biologists estimate that over 99% of all species that have ever existed are now extinct. Life forms called extremophiles have been found surviving in temperature ranges from less than 0 degrees Celsius to over 1,000 degrees Celsius. Radioactive resistant bacteria have been found feeding on plutonium rods and nuclear power generators. Learning this has made me realize that regardless of what effect humans have on the planet, species come and go, and life will go on. Two, life is really just competing genes that have no concept of right or wrong, or good or bad. The only purpose of a gene is to replicate, whether it's plants competing for sunlight or alpha males competing for the affections of the prettiest girl at the dance. The purpose is the same, to replicate. Life is a brutal competition. For most species on Earth, their growth and reproduction depends on the remorselessness, killing, and consumption of other species, as well as the ability to eliminate any life forms, even within their own species or families, that compete for the same resources. Technology and abundance have desensitized us to this reality, that nature truly is red in tooth and claw. Life is dependent on the strong, manipulating, eliminating, or consuming the weak. Learning and accepting this on a deep level has made me less sentimental and upset about habitat destruction and species extinction. Three, the devastating impact on human activity on the planet is in complete accordance with our genetic design. We have evolved to exploit whatever resources are available to us here and now to ensure the next generation of humans. Our big brains and opposable thumbs have allowed us to exploit everything. We are not designed to think and act with concern for the welfare of our great-grandchildren. Learning this has made human behavior more understandable and acceptable to me. I am no longer so angry and judgmental of my family.
Did we lose
Accepting
Mike?
These stark truths about the nature of life has counterintuitively changed my perspective for the better. They have given me a deep gratitude for being alive at this time in this human form. I appreciate my life on a day-to-day basis. I am grateful that I have relative safety, security, and comfort today. I am grateful for relatively cheap, abundant food. I am grateful for the millions of conveniences afforded to me, hot or cold drinkable water at the turn of a tap, cooking heat at the flick of a switch, a flushing toilet. I'm grateful for the endless opportunities to learn about anything I want to via the internet or documentaries or books. I'm grateful for the opportunities to explore and travel. I'm grateful for the abundance of music I can enjoy. I'm grateful for anesthetics at the dentist. I appreciate every single aspect of my life that spares me serious discomfort or pain and affords me opportunities to do interesting and rewarding activities by myself or with the people I care about. Because I know that these wonderful circumstances cannot be counted on to last indefinitely, I appreciate them all the more fully. Life is not fair and life is not forever. I have chosen to accept what is and what will likely be and to make the best of it for as long as it lasts. I have never been happier. If you are struggling to cope with the state and fate of the world as we know it, I hope you will take your own steps and make your own efforts to make the best of a bad situation. I'll end with one of my favorite quotations by Albert Einstein. Quote, strange is our situation here upon Earth. Each of us comes for a short visit, not knowing why, yet sometimes seeming to divine a purpose. From the standpoint of daily life, however, there is one thing we do know, that man is here for the sake of other men, above all for those upon whose smile and well-being our own happiness depends, and also for the countless unknown souls with whose fate we are connected by a bond of sympathy. End quote. Thank you, Afrazin, for your continuing thoughtful contributions. You are our proverbial brother in arms, but without the arms. You're committed to a life of service, as is the case with each of us.
Oh, that was great. Thank you. Well, in support of Afrazin's statement comes the following tidbit. which was posted on Facebook late last week, and it comes from DJ Rebel and was posted in the Near Term Human Extinction Love Group. It's a response to those who falsely claim that revealing evidence brings on depression and is therefore wrong, as in wrong to reveal it. DJ says, quote, "Hello, everyone. It is at this time last year, sometime in July, that I learned about extinction, the end of the world as we know it, and when I first listened to Guy do a talk about the methane eruptions, abrupt climate change, and so on. In just 1 year, there has been some bad times and good times. Let's start with the good. I was blessed getting to know so many people here and joining a few groups and where we could talk about anything under the sun. It has been amazing, and I love this group especially. Finding out that the end was nearer than I thought, even though I knew it was going to happen anyway, changed everything for the better. Seeing the world more when I get the opportunity, enjoying nature to the max, catching up with people and making the most of life. But as we know, bad things have been happening to our beautiful planet. The list of chaos is so long, I wouldn't even know where to begin. Let's hope these great groups continue as long as possible. As we all know, the end will come sometime. And do what we love while we are still here. Love to you all. Live a life of excellence, even if the doom can get to you at times. As long as we know we all love each other and all other life and planet Earth. XXXX." End quote. That's DJ Rebel. Thank you, DJ, for writing that.
Thanks, DJ. You're listening to Nature Bats Last, the Progressive Radio Network. It's our one-year anniversary show. If you care to call in a little while, it's 888-874-4888. And we had a survey that we put out, and we put it on our Nature Bats Last Facebook page, and it was a Survey Monkey, and we asked several questions. So we're going to sum up here a little bit and talk about that. And so just kind of what the results we had, over 100 people respond. 84% of them were male. 85% of them were 41 years or older. 84% of them were from North America. And then we asked for comments based on things they would like to see on the show. And listeners wanted to hear more climate updates because, obviously, that's their favorite segment. And that's really kind of the baseline for the show. They want better sound quality. Part of that depends on where Guy and I are in a lot of cases. Pauline generally is in a place where she has a good connection. When Guy and I are at the Mud Hut, it can get a little dicey because we live really in the sticks. They want more discussions on the topic of nature. And some of the guests they're talking about having on, which Guy has actually interviewed on his YouTube channel, Paul Elric. They'd like to see a bunch of people mention Chris Hedges as well. Jason Box, who we've actually contacted but has turned us down. Natalia Shikova, who we've also contacted both separately, Guy and myself, who we've had no response. A couple people mentioned Noam Chomsky, who also turned us down. People mentioned Stephen Jenkinson, who we'll actually have on. He's the grief walker. We'll have him on September 1st. John Zerzan, anarcho-primitivist and host of Anarchy Radio. He'll be on in 2 weeks. And author Daniel Quinn was mentioned, the author of Ishmael, and we'll have him on next week. So we wrote down all of the guest requests, so to speak, and we will be going through them and contacting people accordingly. Also, people mentioned that they would like to see a list of upcoming shows so they can skip the ones they don't really care about, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I should point out that we've contacted Chris Hedges as well and haven't received a response, at least not yet.
Okay. I think a couple of things that we can discuss here is, you know, people mention they want to hear from more climate scientists, but quite frankly, more climate scientists aren't real eager to talk about it in the first place, let alone come on a show called Nature Bats Last, and maybe Guy could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a little disappointing, the unwillingness of climate scientists to come on the show. As Mike indicated, we contacted Natalia Shikova and Jason Box. Those are some of the leading voices in the climate science community, along with Paul Beckwith, who is courageous enough to make some predictions about the future, and he's been on the show. But the other folks aren't enthusiastic about going on a show where they would actually be expected to reveal in a more informal manner what they know than through the published journal literature. Tim Garrett falls into the category of having been asked to participate and not willing to come on the show. Again, and he made it quite clear, because he doesn't want to reveal informally anything beyond what the journal literature supports. So it's been a little disappointing. We're trying to get these folks and trying to talk about climate change, and we just aren't making much headway with those folks.
Maybe if we change the name to Nature Might Bat Blast.
Right, yeah. Or Nature is Progressing Faster Than Expected, the favorite word phrase among climate scientists.
What's that?
Faster than expected.
Oh, yeah, well.
Maybe we could do a 60-minute show and we could have it done in 15 minutes if we all talk really fast.
How about if we have them on anonymously?
Oh,
and
that's a fine idea.
Right.
Yeah. We could manipulate their voice.
Yeah.
Or we could have Steve and Sarah play Natalia Shukova and Jason Bach. I mean, nobody knows what they really sound like, right? Because they only publish stuff. They don't go on the radio. So you guys can say anything. They're game. They're in a couple of weeks.
There we go. I mean, I think it's obviously many of these climate scientists are afraid to come forward. You know, as I documented in my documentary, they are paying their bills by doing the work that they do, and they can't afford because, you know, they have mortgages, they've got kids, they got to put through school, and we see what happened to several of them when they did speak up and tell the truth. Guy, you're unique in that way. That you're not beholden to any organizations. You're not on anyone's payroll. So despite some people saying that you're some kind of shill, no, you're speaking from your heart and from your intelligence and from what you know. So, you know, maybe we need to find more people like you, I think.
On the plus side, I was interviewed by a guy writing a story for Rolling Stone just yesterday, Rolling Stone magazine. It seems that the popular press is more willing to pursue radicalism than most of the scientists are. And I was also interviewed for the magazine Esquire by John Richardson recently, and that was a really well-done article that we've talked about on this show in the past. In addition, Bill Nye, the science guy, is scheduled to come out here with a National Geographic film crew for the National Geographic Explorer series. They had proposed doing a six-part show on the stages of grief. So they were going to talk to some climate scientists and other people who are doing work like I'm doing to connect the dots. And they were the person who contacted me, the producer for the show, said, we're going to do this six-part show focused on Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's Five Stages of Grief, and we don't know what we're going to do with the other show. And I had a quick answer, of course. I said, you need to focus on the sixth stage of grief. And it got really quiet. Like, I could tell he thought, he was thinking, I should know the sixth stage of grief, but I don't. I thought there were only five. And then I told him, gallows humor. That's the one where I spend most of my time. And I'm not sure if they're going to pursue that or not, but they're coming out with Bill Nye, the science guy, within about a month or so to shoot some footage here at the Mud Hut.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that should be interesting just to see the response of, I guess, interacting with you, somebody who's, I would consider, obviously very mainstream, but speaking out nonetheless and getting airtime, so...
Well, and I have the distinct impression that Mr. Nye hasn't accepted the notion of abrupt climate change yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to this as potentially an educational opportunity. Right. Because there are so many well-paid climate scientists who are willing to talk about the climate change that we have known since we were kids, but who seem reluctant to step forward into the arena of abrupt climate change, which, as we know, is a completely different animal than the sort of linear climate change we've heard about since at least the 1980s.
Right.
Well, you got to quit. We got to quit amping it up so much, Guy. Come on.
Right.
What's next? Super abrupt climate change?
Yeah. Super abrupt climate change comes after abrupt climate
Instantaneous
change.
Instantaneous abrupt climate change.
I can see Marvel Comics taking this on.
Right. Climate change, man.
Right. There you go.
And super abrupt climate change, man. The battle goes on.
That would work.
All right.
Do we have a call? Do we have a caller on the line?
We do.
We do have a caller from Florida. His name is Matt, and he wants to talk to you about climate change, Guy.
Well, let's bring it on.
Hello?
Hey, Matt.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine, Matt. Go ahead with your question.
Well, thank you so much, Guy, for your efforts and energies to put on the hat of a public relations professional when your career has been in education and research. And I think you've probably already discovered that the process of learning public relations and getting your message out is a science unto itself.
Yes, it's a science that I have yet to fully master, for sure.
Well, this difficulty of the non-overlapping strata of research and truth and getting the message out, I just wish you well, and perhaps our paths can cross after this phone call even further. I ran an ad agency for some years, but I saw your piece, Where Only Love Remains, and I have a personal friend who is a climate scientist for NOAA, and I'm not really sure if he'll have his job with the latest round of budget cuts. The Koch brothers have done an excellent job of undermining information about global warming, and they're affecting our political system as well. But I hope he keeps his job, and I hope he continues to report, information to the rest of us. And the information that you provided, I sent to him, and I said, you know, what's going on with this man? He's saying that we have an opportunity for abrupt climate change. And that climate scientist was intrigued by your theory. He didn't confirm or deny, but did have respect for your point of view. And I hope that you're getting the respect that you're due. And one of the comments you made during the Nature Bats last piece was about how you're not going to be invited to college campuses because you evolve into discussions of what the emotional state is from this project. And I see that you have a support group, an abrupt climate change support group that's designed to support people's emotions through the reality of what we're facing as a species. I was really hoping to hear what your relationship was to this support group and this concept of having salons and groups of people getting together to discuss the true sadness of this. I live at a Buddhist center. I'm a Buddhist meditation teacher, and basically the process of handling the angst that's coming from Florida's current floods is, you know, part of my job. And you know, if this current flood situation continues, we're going to be full-time here at the Buddhist center talking to people distressed.
Yeah, thanks for your question, Matt. There have been several support groups that form in the wake of presentations I deliver. There was one in many of the towns I spoke on my recent tour through Western Europe. Each of the first three presentations I delivered was followed by a sign-up sheet and a support group that now meets monthly in each of those three towns. And the same sort of thing happened when I was in Cascadia recently. So these have become fairly common. A woman called me on the phone from Seattle, Washington, yesterday or the day before, wanting to know how she can create a support group. And really, it's on the people in the local community to do that. There's another part. You mentioned Only Love Remains, which is a workshop developed by Pauline and I. You can find it at onlyloveremains.org. And that, too, has been gaining some traction lately and is really the next logical step. Once you come to grips with the notion of abrupt climate change and where it goes, lack of habitat for humans and many other organisms on the planet, then how do you deal with that? For the most part, it's a pretty lonely feeling. And so the workshop and the support groups are intended to deal with just that. Pauline, did you want to weigh in a little bit from your perspective?
Well, the workshop is it's not therapy. It's not a therapy session, and it's not designed to be a therapy session. We're not therapists. I just want to make sure people know that. The support groups on Facebook are also not therapy groups. They are groups where people can get together and talk, and they have actually formed not by Guy. He did not create these groups. These are just individuals getting together who have formed these groups out of a need. Most support groups in your neighborhood or city talk about near-term human extinction. So this is an opportunity for people. And there are salons popping up everywhere. So I would recommend, going to the blog and checking those out. I guess Sky eventually will put up a little link there for the different the websites and the groups that you can join if you need to feel like you want to talk about this stuff. So I think we're going to move on, and we'll take some more calls later on. But if you're holding and waiting to ask a question, just keep holding. We're going to go to Forrest now, because Forrest has some breaking hopium for us, and we're really excited to hear that. And after Forrest, we're going to hear from Corey Morningstar and Alexis from Alexandria. And Forrest, how are you doing? Are you out there?
Yes, I'm here. Doing pretty good today. No complaints.
That's great. What do you have for us today? We're really excited to hear from you.
Okay, today it is Iraqi vacations. All right. That is the theme. Right. Holidays are looked at as a momentary respite from the perpetual vagaries of existence within a cycle of groundhog days, otherwise known as the typical work week. Regarding these ever-decreasing days off, the relief from vacation that is prevalent in the face of the typical worker is something that can't be masked, no matter how hard he or she tried to keep it from the employer of record. So it's continue to be seen as industrious and a company person to the powers that be. But in Iraq, this past week, there was a four-day holiday for workers. Was it a religious celebration? No. Was it a state celebration? No. Was it a cultural celebration? No. As these are the main reasons for any number of holidays in a country, it must be asked, why was there a moratorium on work for 4 days in Iraq? The answer is that it was due to the temperature. This past week, the temperatures reached a scorching 126 degrees Fahrenheit in that country. As there were mass protests in the streets regarding the lack of electric power that facilitated the unexpected holiday, the state decided that in order to alleviate the burden of just existing, it would suspend them having to go to a job in addition to having to deal with the exorbitant temperature that was pretty close to making life itself unbearable for the citizenry. Even though it was 126 degrees in Iraq, this was a veritable winter wonderland in comparison to what his neighbor, Iran, was seeing in its temperature rise, which soared to 165 degrees in some regions. As oil has dropped to less than $50 a barrel, with one of the reasons being the sanctions discontinued by the Western world due to the recent nuclear deal imposed on Iran by the United States, it may be seen as a sign of poetic justice that the country is experiencing this type of environmental hell, considering that this will allow the country to export an estimated X million barrels of oil a day in production, which will contribute to some extent to the climate disaster they are experiencing currently. This excess heat in the Middle East is attributed to a heat dome, a type of high-pressure ridge that develops in the upper atmosphere, causing air below it to sink while sending the mercury soaring. And even though it is a true phenomenon, the hotbed, pun intended, of Middle East turmoil is always framed in regards to religious extremism and its natural resources. Yet there has been and will continue to be little talk regarding the escalation in temperatures the next few years, which will be due to climate change. As the Western world has no problem in framing the social narrative as what is plaguing the Middle East is its inherent inferiority as savages. The environmental disaster of that region and the long-term ramifications of its finite oil bonanza will get no airplay. Therefore, this Iraqi vacation was anything other than a gift. It was acknowledgement that it was too hot to even work. What people better realize is that once the energy infrastructure totally collapses, as it will for them and even us one day in the Western world, it will be too hot to live in that region. Then we will understand that living is much more important than working in the grand scheme of things. Of course, like most things with man, it will be too little, too late.
Thanks for your commentary, Forrest. Timely as usual. We have a follow-up question for you. Will you share your thoughts about being part of this show? Has this been anything of import to you? Is this meaningful to you? Does it matter? Do you wish you had done other things with your time?
I can say unequivocally no. I had to say that being a part of Nature Best Labs is probably one of the best parts of my life. And the reason that is because it's a lonely existence thinking the way that we do. And I want to say that all inclusively, because I know how each one of the people on this radio show thinks. I know how I think. And it's a very isolating existence. If it wasn't for these few people out here who really are willing to face the truth, then I'm not going to say I would go crazy, but getting still, you would start to question yourself. You would start to question whether or not you really are seeing things as being true. And as being a part of Nature Best Labs is probably the only place that I have an outlet where I can not express my truth. Because I always hate when people say that, you're expressing your truth. No, if it's the truth, then it's the truth. All right? And I'll debate whatever it is I say with anybody, but don't minimalize me or you guys to saying that it is your truth. It is the truth. And in the not-too-distant future, people are going to come to you and to me and a few other folks. I wish it was many more to try to get an answer for things that they're not getting from the mainstream. So that's what you guys provide me. You provide me that voice that I hear so few times in this world. And I'm just thankful that I'm a part of it, to whatever degree that is.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that commentary and for the follow-up commentary as well. We have Corey Morningstar and Alexis from Alexandria with us as well. Corey, did you want to pitch in your 2 cents?
Hey, guy. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Good to hear from you guys. I don't have a breaking hopium piece, but I think I stated earlier, Forrest thought, more often than not, always speak for me as well, and I wanted to say how much I appreciate you guys and Forrest especially on the show, and also his extensive help with Wrong Kind of Green. We both work on Wrong Kind of Green together, and yeah, Forrest is a great guy and financially supports Wrong Kind of Green right out of his slave, as he calls it. His working job pays for a tech guy and that, so I just wanted to say how much I appreciate that. And also, since this is the anniversary, I don't have a breaking hopium piece. I was just thinking, Guy, how I think it was about a year ago that we were on the show together talking about the People's Climate March, you know, and here we are almost a year later, into September almost, you know, and there and again another day and nothing changed. And I remember talking about that and writing about that and people being so pissed off, you know, and defending that. So, you know, like this whole hope and change Obama kind of dogma, mantra. And, you know, it's just amazing, you know, the years keep going by and nothing happens and people are so unwilling to see. So thank you. Thanks for not censoring me. Thanks for having me on your show and asking me to come back. And thanks to all the people involved.
Well, thank you for being a regular contributor here. We didn't expect everybody to have a bit of breaking hopium. And Forrest speaks well, I think, for all of us, and I very much appreciate his perspective.
Yes.
Mike, did you want to weigh in?
Is Alexis from Alexandria on?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hey. I was just wondering your thoughts as well. You know, we pretty much asked the same question of Forrest and Corey and your thoughts of being on the show.
Oh, sure. I will, I guess, do a little tirade, and then you guys can ask me any questions that you have. So last week was a weird week, and this was largely attributed on social media to the blue moon phenomenon, which I naturally assumed was about the beer rather than something astronomical. But hey, what do I know, because I'm wrong so often these days. So the upside of last week was a huge surge in the popularity of the U.S. social justice movement Black Lives Matter. The downside was that the increase in support was really due to the murder of an African lion, which apparently appalled white America into action. And I'm assuming that they're equally appalled about the black, white, Native American, Asian, and Latino humans who are being killed by police with increasing frequency and impunity, both domestically and abroad. And they're also mortified that we've wiped out half of the world's wildlife since 1970, a mere 45 years. So I'm kind of hoping that Leonardo DiCaprio will do a reality show about wildlife conservation, you know, from his private island that he bought to make an eco-resort for the wealthy. And what kind of wealthy, you might ask? I don't know. Maybe the kind of wealthy that can afford to fly to another country and trophy hunt lions. And all of this, of course, was followed by an exchange with an acquaintance of mine who actually works on Wall Street. And this person posted about affordable public housing in Brooklyn with studios going for $2,000 a month. And then they launched into a tirade about market forces and supply and demand, and that people who can't afford to live in New York should just not live there. I did at that point offer a polite correction and pointed out that New York City and the surrounding areas were far more affordable prior to Housing Bubble 1.0 and current Housing Bubble 2.0. And that the current housing and rental prices have actually nothing to do with market forces and everything to do with the financialization of yet another asset bubble. And this garnered the wonderful response of, uh-huh, that was it, literally, uh-huh. So I'm not sure if that was sarcasm or acknowledgement of defeat, like maybe I just knocked it out of the ballpark and they had nothing more to contribute. But I'm going to count it as a win because, like I said before, I'm wrong so often these days, so I got to take the ones when I can get them.
Right. Well, Alexis, you speak for us. I have to, if I may say so. I mean, this past week was very interesting with this lion thing. Thank you for that. That's amazing. And can you tell us what it's been like for you doing this? Little breaking hopiums on Nature Bats Last.
I think Forrest really nailed it. It's really cathartic. I kind of inhabit this strange space. My background and training is kind of like U.S. and American, you know, studies and sociology and all of those types of things. So I almost feel these days that I'm more of an observer almost than a participant in life because everywhere around me, I'm just looking at the dissonance between what we're told is happening and then what is actually happening. So it's a strange space to inhabit, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to speak freely about these things that we're observing and how incongruous they are with, you know, the way that people are living their lives. And in addition to that, it's really inspiring to be able to even, you know, be recorded on the same show as some of these really bold pioneers who are, you know, speaking truthfully about what's happening in the world. And it really gives me a lot of energy, I think, on the days where I kind of am more inclined to just kind of quietly observe and not say anything. It really does give you more confidence to speak out and to find your tribe, to find the other people who you share these observations and have the tenacity to hold in one hand the uncomfortable truths about, you know, what our potential future looks like and the reality that, you know, maybe where you are today isn't that bad. I mean, you know, I'm glad it's not 109 degrees like it was in Iran, and then what was it, 154 is their heat index. You know, I'm sitting inside of an air-conditioned room very comfortably. And but I you know, I feel I have emotions behind that too. I feel indicted in, you know, in my lifestyle and the things that I appreciate. Last year we mostly went without air conditioning, but this year we have not. And yeah, there's a lot of complex emotions, and it's good to have a space to talk about that.
That's great. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Would you consider doing a radio show full time?
I don't know that anyone's interested in hearing me full time.
PRN is looking for good hosts.
I look forward to the show with the three of you, Forrest, Corey, and
Oak.
Yeah.
I think that'd be
awesome. I don't know if the airwaves can take that.
No, Forrest, I guarantee they couldn't take you full time.
You
definitely deserve the title as the realest man in radio.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I hope you guys are planning to go to my funeral. We can start playing that the day I get on the radio full time or on a weekly basis. Yeah, somebody's going to take me out. I don't know who it's going to be.
No, don't say that. That's bad juju.
I'm just being funny.
No, Forrest would have to do it like Jesse Ventura? Like, go to Mexico and then do a show.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right, there you go.
Leave the country,
it.
Yeah. That probably would be the best bet for me.
Yeah, fortunately, we can do things globally these days. But, nothing's off the table. We could do any number of shows or use platforms like Wrong Kind of Green, which is a great website you guys should all be checking out if no one is. It's crazy times, and we don't even know how long the grid's going to be up.
Can you say that website again?
That's it also. Yeah. I think that for me, just to interject real fast, for me it's more just telling people to prepare themselves. Because I know that Chris Hedges hasn't come on, and I doubt that he will come on because he's a shill. I mean, if he hears this, I hate to say it, but that's what he is. Because there's no reason why he shouldn't come on the airwaves and talk with you, right? I mean, for everything that I read and heard from him, there's no reason, because you guys talk in the same language, but his is lip service and you really mean it. So he should come on here and not, if not defending himself, he should be in solidarity with you guys. But he did say something about Marx during the last Left conference. It was a video that Corey sent me, and he was talking about Marx, and Marx said 150 years ago, say, right now. And he said that man is going to use these resources till they can't any longer. Like, we're just going to keep going. He didn't know that we would have stuff like, of course, the Internet and all these modern-day contraptions that we have. But he did see, we're going to run this out till the wheels fall off. And I've accepted that also, right? So I know that. Yeah, it's like I was talking with Corey, and I told her that I was talking with a man who's college educated, has a degree, smart guy, probably around 10, 12 years older than me. I'm 42, so he's in his early 50s, excuse me. And I told him, yes, in order for everybody on this planet to have the lifestyle that we have now with the air-conditioned rooms and the cars and the television, all these different things, you'd have to have five Earths. And he's like, five, what? I said, five planets just like this. And he couldn't comprehend it. He just could not comprehend it. He still saw the economy as being a driver, as if somebody in Egypt, if they would just get themselves together and take on the social mores and the economic system that we have here, that's that person's greatest impediment to having all this largesse. It's astounding. So there's no way that I'm going to be, maybe if I was able to spend 10 years just talking to this guy, maybe I could have some type of headway. But short of that, there's no way, and just talking about America, out of a population of 340, 350 million people, I mean, there's probably only about 0.0001% that think even close to us. So imagine how much time we would have to spend trying to drill this into the head of the average American. It'd be definitely impossible. But there will come a point when we don't have these resources, where people have no place to turn to. I just hope they don't turn on each other, which is what's most likely going to happen, knowing the American mindset. So, I'm sorry.
I did actually just see a post, and I didn't get a chance to read it yet, so I'm not saying that it's entirely accurate, but this one says that 80% of crops failed in Mongolia this season. Oh. I mean, what do you do when, you know, when you have these systematic collapses? And as Forrest, you know, wisely pointed out, we look at the instability in the Middle East and we know about, you know, the Arab Spring and how that was related to food availability and food prices. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, people have very basic needs. And when you can't meet those needs, you're not worried about what's going on social media or Twitter, or maybe you are because there's nothing to eat. I don't know. it is very difficult. We are not trained, and I hung out with a lot of engineers, but I am not an engineer. If you don't understand complex systems and if you can't see how all of these things, you know, interlock, I mean, it is impossible to get the bigger picture. And I think most people are either too scared of science or reading.
I can speak for this, Alexis, in this aspect. I am an engineer, and I work with other engineers, and I can say unequivocally, they don't know jack either. They don't understand. In fact, the guy that I was talking about who did not understand the Earth concept, he was an engineer. So it has nothing to do with the understanding of science. You would figure that they would have at least some concept because we deal with the science and no clue whatsoever. None. And, I mean, I've talked with business guys and engineers and people in all different aspects across the board, and it's the same psychosis here in America, regardless of what your trade is. It's across the board.
I think psychosis is probably the best word. You are absolutely right. it is impossible when you have these conversations and you're trying to explain something to someone, and then you think about how complex and how many things go into it, and you're like, I couldn't explain this to you if I wanted to.
Yeah. So I have a wrap-up question for the three of you. Do you know each other beyond the Internet, or is this strictly an electronic experience between the three of you?
No, I think I first heard Forrest, you know, doing his breaking Hopium pieces, and then I stalked him a little bit on Facebook, which he was kind enough to allow me to do. And same thing with Corey, that I engaged her in some, you know, Internet sardonic, dark critiques and conversations about the insanity of what's going on. Which, by the way, Corey, I'm sure you'll be happy to know that Avez, or however you say that organization, they jumped all over that Cease of the Lion story, boy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, don't get that.
Let no tragedy go, you know, unused.
So true.
Well, I just heard today that Naomi Klein said that Obama's really starting to sound like a real climate leader. So, will he act like one?
4 more years.
Yeah.
Drill baby drill.
Oh, wait, no, he
leader?
Just made some comment. Instead, he was like, I think I could run again and win. And he was like, I won't, but, you know, I feel like I could. I was like, what is going on right now?
Wow.
Even if he could run again and win, it's because he opened the Arctic to drilling.
Yeah right.
Well, everybody, it's that and the morons that they have running, you know, in this next cycle. I mean, it's like Dumb and Dumber, man.
So true.
Yeah, the best of the worst. Yes, without a doubt.
I'm not running.
But I mean, just so I can say this really fast. I mean, I haven't met Alexis nor Corey, and it's just been, as you said, over the Internet, which I'm very sad about that, because the one thing I do know is that we do have to start connecting, actual physical contact with one another, because if it is true, and I say that in quotations because we know that it's true, we better start planning for the future. I know Guy and Michael and Pauline, I know you guys are, but that's something I got to get out ahead of, because now it is about self-preservation. Now, if the building is burning and people aren't willing to get out of it, then you best get yourself out of it. So that would be my best advice to anybody. You know, because I've gone through all that, the five stages of grief, and, man, I've been broke down, and I've cried, and I've done all types of things. And now it's like, hey, you know what? I got to look out for me and my best interest. And my best interest is also to be around people who think like me, who won't turn on me when the lights go out. All right. That's the most important thing.
Get to the yurt.
That's right. All roads lead to the yurt. Yes,
that's right.
Right. Yeah, well, trust me, I'd have been gone if I could get my husband on board. So,
One thing at a time. Oh, but once again, as this saying goes, all roads lead to the yurt. It does not matter about how anybody, our family, friends, associates, how anybody feels about it. I mean, eventually it's going to come down the pike here. So, and relatively soon.
Oh, yeah.
And relatively soon.
No, I agree. You know, it just, you know, you want to be the, what is the analogy, the grasshopper and the whatever one that was playing. Yeah, that whole analogy. I'd rather be, you know, preparing for what's inevitable. But, you know, I was fortunate, I guess, in having a partner that I just feel very blessed, you know, to have. So, you know, whatever. I'll make my stand wherever he wants to be.
There it is, right?
The outcomes are the same regardless. But, you know, I'd prefer to move somewhere more conducive to what's coming, but, you know, in the absence of that, you know, plant your flag where you are.
That's true. At a certain juncture, we're all going for the dirt now. So, yes, that is...
And on that note...
it's rather morbid, but yeah, yes.
Well, we thank the three of you for being on, and we look forward to future contributions and hopefully someday in person.
Yeah,
we have to make that happen.
Ooh, yeah, we have to be in the live audience.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
All right, we have a climate update from Guy. Take it away, Guy.
I have several updates. These are from the past 2 weeks, and that's why it's going to take a little longer than usual today. Feedback number 8 gets a boost. This feedback discusses various characteristics of wildfires. According to a paper published in the July 14th issue of Nature Communications, the length of the fire season has increased markedly since 1979. And by markedly, I mean nearly 20%. That's just since 1979. Support for Tim Garrett's pioneering work finally came from the broader scientific community with a paper published in the July 15th, 2015 online issue of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This is a major journal, folks, finally reinforcing Garrett's conclusion that civilization is a heat engine. These two sentences are the bottom line from the abstract. Quote, with the rapid depletion of this chemical energy, the Earth is shifting back toward the inhospitable equilibrium of outer space with fundamental ramifications for the biosphere and humanity. Because there is no substitute or replacement energy for living biomass, the remaining distance from equilibrium that will be required to support human life is unknown, end quote. These sentences are about as close as any admission you'll find from the journal literature that habitat for humans is on its way out. Water bodies within Africa's interior are adding significantly to the overall release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, according to a paper in the July 20th, 2015 online edition of Nature Geoscience. Specifically, quote, total carbon dioxide equivalent greenhouse gas emissions are about 0.9 petagrams carbon per year, equivalent to about one quarter of the global ocean and terrestrial combined carbon sink, end quote. To clarify, a petagram is equivalent to 1 trillion kilograms. Some of us are more familiar with English units, so I've done the conversion for all of us. 0.9 petagrams of carbon per year is equivalent to a few trillion buttloads. I've added this information to feedback number 28. Regional warming events during the past 56,000 years were described in the July 23, 2015 online edition of Science and led to the outcome I've come to expect. This is from the abstract, quote, unexpectedly, gee, I'd have never seen that one coming, rapid climate changes associated with interstadial warming events are strongly associated with the regional replacement slash extinction of major genetic clades or species of megafauna, end quote. These are regional warming events, and the focus here is on the extinction of myriad large animals during the end of the Pleistocene, incorrectly attributed by many scholars to the rapacious humans new to Western North America. This is another nail in the coffin of the all humans are horrible category that is often used as an excuse for ongoing planetary omnicide at the hand of civilization. Civilization lies at the root of the predicament, not human behavior. In short, according to the study, quote, it doesn't bode well for the future survival of the world's megafauna population. end quote. In this study, megafauna refers to animals exceeding 45 kilograms, that's about 99 pounds. Humans, of course, fall into this category, and I doubt we'll be losing enough weight to matter, at least not until it no longer matters. Further evidence indicates a global average temperature rise above the political target of 2 degrees Celsius is already assured in the absence of fantasy technology. Specifically, as pointed out by the title of a paper published in yesterday's issue of Nature Communications, quote, negative emissions physically needed to keep global warming below 2 degrees C. According to the abstract of the paper, this approach has, quote, not been shown to be feasible. And finally, according to a paper published yesterday also in the issue of Nature Climate Change, quote, carbon dioxide removal, CDR, from the atmosphere has been proposed as a measure for mitigating global warming and ocean acidification. Focusing on pH, temperature, and dissolved oxygen, we find that even after several centuries of CDR deployment, past CO2 emissions would leave a substantial legacy in the marine environment, end quote. In other words, removal of atmospheric carbon dioxide, even if it were possible at scale, would be insufficient to overcome the damage experienced by the ocean with respect to pH, temperature, and dissolved oxygen.
Wow.
Well, on that note.
That was pretty unbelievable.
And yet, I still am allowed to attend the occasional party. It's weird.
Okay, well, that's our one-year anniversary show, and we'd like to thank Pauline and Guy and Forrest and Corey and Alexis and our caller, one caller, Matt. We promised to get to more callers. We just kind of ran out of time. It was a new thing for us, so we'll try it again next time. That about wraps it up for this week, so make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Best Last on the Progressive Radio Network, or join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Best Last on PRN.FM, and feel free to post questions if you'd like to have them addressed on the show, and follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. We'll see you on the radio next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern with Ishmael author Daniel Quinn. And if you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at PRN.FM and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to all our guests and hosts for their time and work, and thanks to Afrazin for his music and his message. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, Pauline and Guy, what happens?
Nature best last.
That's last.
Bad.